film sucks. Indie film sucks. It's the Indie Film Sucks podcast. Yeah.
Coming at you from the mean streets of St. Louis, from a basement on South Broadway, the Indie Film Sucks podcast. Because indie film sucks.
Man, he had a little pep in that step.
Yes, he did.
Got me there.
I did.
Woke me up.
Well, glad to be back. Glad everyone's here.
Go Blues.
Go Blues.
Go Blues. Hey, 3 points out. Well, I don't know when this one's going to play.
They're out.
We could have missed it. No, but at the time of recording, we're 3 points out with like 4 games to play. So,
yeah,
Go Blues. Okay.
We'll see how that goes.
Well, go Cardinals, too. They're doing pretty good. I got a feeling.
Yeah, did they win last night?
They did last night, not tonight. Nice. No, they're looking pretty good.
Yeah. Don't think about today as when you do.
Yeah,
it.
Did they win 2 weeks ago?
Exactly. Blues have been out of the playoffs for 2 weeks.
Cardinals
are 4 games out of first place.
All this is probably going to get chopped up.
Hey!
Oh, God.
That was last week.
Oh, I like your jersey, though. It looks good.
Thank you.
I do too. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, but I did get, you know, I was almost asleep before you woke me up, but thank you.
No, you're welcome.
All right, I think we should introduce ourselves. I'm Mackie.
Chris Grega.
And I am Brock Roberts.
All right, this is
nice
the
to meet y'all.
Indie Film Sucks podcast.
Yeah.
We talk about the highs, the lows, and everything in between.
Episode 51.
51. Can you believe it?
No.
Man, what a party on 50. God bless America. If you did not listen to 50,
you're missing
out. Go back and listen to 50.
But we've had a couple good episodes. That was a good one. I've been pretty...
What's our percentage of good episodes, Brock?
Okay, I'm not going to go there. No, actually, all of them have some stuff in them that I like.
Yeah. Well, there's the highs, lows, and in-betweens.
Yeah.
In the episodes themselves.
Yes.
That's true, too.
Even the episodes have highs and lows and in-betweens, not just the content.
Mostly lows.
All right. So 51, right? Coming off big celebration. I'm still a little hungover from that. So it was huge. They had the awards out there.
I know.
Man.
Won 3 of the big awards.
I mean, how are we going to top that?
One thing I forgot to mention last week was, so... We didn't drive up together, right? And I'm on my way home, and I'm thinking about what a nice little night we just had. And I'm like, how'd this happen, you know? Because we had 3 awards, right?
Yeah.
Best director, best actress, and, you know, I got lucky with best actor. And I'm driving home. I'm like, oh, I'm going to look at this thing. I just won it. I'm feeling good. I look at it, and it says... Best director, Chris Grega.
Oh,
like,
you got the wrong award. You got so excited you started grabbing awards.
Yeah, and then Brock calls me up. He's like, hey, man, I got your award. You want me to swing by and give it to you? I'm like, that's cool.
No, man, I'm good.
So I took home the best director award.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. Should have taken home best producer.
And he
producer.
Got 2 best actor awards.
I know.
Nice. Yeah. Well, it all worked out, right?
It did.
Okay, you got the right one tonight?
Yeah.
I hope so.
It's home now.
Last week, yeah.
Okay.
It's not the Stanley Cup, that much I know.
It's not. It's
that'll
not.
Never come back. Right.
It was to me, though. It was to
so
me.
How are we going to back up 50 with 51? What's on the agenda tonight, boys?
It's a great question.
I just started drinking early, so whatever happens, happens.
All right.
Well, here's what I've been thinking about a lot lately.
Okay.
Because, you know, you always have to be working on projects.
True.
Right? And we just wrapped up Red Knight, and we're going through... the, let's say, the post production of Red Knight, you know, the selling it and all that jazz. And we know what a tough time that is. What I'm working on right now are number of screenplays.
Okay.
And I'm just thinking about, you know, I'm not thinking about budget, not thinking about any of that. I'm just thinking about the process of storytelling and how do you decide what's next if you're an indie, right? We're not a big studio. We're not sitting on a pile of cash. And even if Red Knight makes a decent amount of money, it's still not going to make millions of dollars, right? If we pay the investors back, we'll be happy with that. We don't know what's going to happen with Red Knight or any of that process, but you always got to be thinking about, you know, what's next. Like I said, we're not a major studio, so whatever we do next, it's not going to be some multi-million dollar project. It's going to be still a small budget, whether it's, you know, a $20,000 budget or a $200,000 budget or whatever, that's still, even $1 million is still a small budget film.
Right.
Right, and I'm not anticipating making a $1 million film next. Who knows what we're going to make next? But I'm working on that process, and I've got couple of things in the hopper, and I'm just thinking about that whole writing process for me, because, you know, my girlfriend, she's very interested in this, I guess because we've only been together for a couple of years, and indie film has not been burned out of her yet, so she's still interested in the process.
You found a good one.
Yeah, I know, because she's not a filmmaker, right? Oh, she doesn't understand how
any of this... It's still kind of sexy to her.
Yeah, she doesn't understand how any of this stuff works, and, and unless you do it, of course you wouldn't understand. Yeah. What it starts for me is I'll have an idea, and the first thing is I'll get an idea, and I have to decide, okay, does this idea make sense? Because I get ideas all the time. Mm-hmm. For films, and you know, something will just come to me, you know, Roman soldiers trapped in a fort by a werewolf, right? I'll just get something like that, which is like, is that reasonable to do on our budget level? And the answer to something like that is probably not, but that's more interesting than, you know, two guys sitting in a room in a suburban house.
That sounds like a good scene.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. Go. I want to hear this whole process because it's interesting to me, because I was listening to Stephen Colbert and he was telling a story and somebody asked him in the audience, like, I want to do what you do, right? And he's just like, what? And they're like, talk show host. And he goes, I didn't start out as a talk show host. You got to be kidding me. I did improv and then I did this and then I became a writer. And he's like, write everything down, write every idea down, because eventually they got to the point where there was a pad formula, right? Mm-hmm. And he could think about it without thinking about it. And he knew what was a good idea, what was a bad idea, but he knew how to put it in a sequential order. So when you said that, the first thing I thought of is, so do you do that? Like when you get an idea, do you put that together and go, okay, now I'm going to do the Chris Greger formula?
Basically. Okay. I mean, I'll take whatever it is. Let's say it's a werewolf.
Right. Okay. Whatever your idea is, Whatever it is. Not what sounds better, because I think that's subjective a little bit to you.
Then I'll see, okay, does this story make sense? Does it have a beginning, a middle, and an end? Okay. I don't have to know all the exact points of it, but I'm like, okay, I usually have a vague idea who, like, my main character is, and I know the beginning of the story, and I know the end of the story 9 times out of 10. That's where I start. That's where I started with Red Knight. I knew exactly who the main character was. I knew exactly where it was going to begin, and I knew exactly where it was going to end. The hard part is putting all the shit in the middle that makes sense.
Okay.
Right? So the first thing I'll do...
Connecting rods.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. That's the first thing I'll do is I'll make sure everything connects and makes sense.
It's a connecting rod, though. What do you say? What do you mean by rod? Just
shut up, Mackie. I don't even know.
I don't... Oh, okay. I was like, I go, is this a term
no,
I've never...
Sir, no, it's not a real term. Oh, okay. I'm fucking with you. It's just, you got
to
connect...
You just went with it. Like, yeah, connecting rod.
You got to connect the middle to the end of the
front, so. Thank you. Okay, I'm sorry, Chris.
Wow.
I was rudely interrupted by Brock with connecting rods, and I thought he's throwing a... I'm the guy who doesn't know all the industry terms.
I just made up a new one.
Yes.
Well, yeah, connecting rods. Try to keep up.
Okay.
God, you don't know what a connecting rod is.
Okay.
What a fucking idiot. Chris.
Yes. So you have the thing. You got a beginning and a... Right now, you got to make sense, right?
Yeah. So then I work on the outline. I have to make the whole story make sense. Okay. And once the story makes sense... Then I start the first draft. And the first draft, you know, I think it was Hemingway that said all first drafts are shit. Right?
So are you thinking about length yet? Like pages? Are you thinking about... I mean, when do you start putting that in the concept of, can I make this into a movie? Can I make this into... Right? Because 90 minutes, the time frame, that all matters.
Well, I am always looking at 90 pages.
90 pages, okay.
For me, personally, I'm always looking to make a 90-minute film. Because
page a minute, that's formula, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I probably mentioned before, I'm a big fan of the three act structure. Not everybody is.
Three acts, Brock.
Oh, not rods?
No, he said this earlier. I thought he said three X's.
Yeah.
I go, what's the three X process? And he goes, three acts, you dummy. You know, yes.
I'm a big fan of the triple X process.
Right.
Like triple Xmas.
Triple X, yeah, shout out.
So three act thing?
Yeah, three act process. Go ahead.
Three act structure. That's the standard...
It is.
Storytelling structure.
It is.
And it doesn't have to be. I mean, you can make as many acts as you want, but that's sort of the
so basically it's the oh shit, holy shit, oh fuck type of thing.
No, because you need to...
And then they get the crescendo.
Well, that would be three acts. First act is the problem, right? And then how do they
look at the problem,
right? And then they resolve the problem at the end.
Yeah, but you got to have some old shits in between there.
Well, yeah, the first act sets up the hero and, yeah. and the problem. Right. The second
introduces
act...
introduces the characters.
Yes, and introduces the characters. The second act is the hero struggling with whatever the problem is. And the third act is the resolution.
The crescendo.
Okay, so you got that. You like the three act. It works for you.
Yes.
Okay.
Where were we?
You're talking about the three
yeah.
acts.
So, yeah, and then you connect them all together with the rods.
With the through rods. Okay, so you got the three acts.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And that's part of
your, I got them.
That's part of your process. Because you're a strong believer in the three-act process.
I'm a strong believer in the three-act structure, yes.
Yes. And that works for you.
Yeah, it works for a lot of people.
So what do you
works real well for Sid Field.
So what okay, do you so now you're building
recently,
off that.
Recently, to get back to where you're probably going, what are you doing now? Because that's what you're really starting to work on different scripts or ideas right now.
Right now, I'm outlining one screenplay, and then I have another screenplay that is not up to the first draft yet. I'm still working on that, and I've got another screenplay that is on draft two.
Yeah, I actually started reading something what you had on your laptop in your living room a couple weeks ago. And you go, don't read that shit. I'm not ready yet. I'm like, sorry, man.
Oh.
So I
the main know. Character died in the first page.
Yeah.
Hey, Brock, you're the lead. I mean, you're the main character. I mean, just don't read it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so the process for me is have an idea, make an outline, do the first draft. First draft, as Hemingway said, all first drafts are shit. No one sees a first draft. And once that first draft is done, then I will sit on that for a week or so. Won't look at it, won't think about it, won't do anything with it. Then I'll go back and I'll do the second draft. And the second draft is basically fixing as much shit as I can that I didn't fix in the first draft. And the third draft is usually what I will show friends and family asking for feedback.
So, I mean, when you're cutting stuff out, do you feel like you created too many characters? Do you feel like it's too complex?
All sorts of stuff.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, too many characters, not enough character development, too much character development, too much this, not enough of that. It's a whole...
Like, where'd this come from? Yeah. It can't just pop in here.
It's a whole laundry list of things that usually have to be fixed.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, it's like, shit, this is a main character, but they didn't come into page 20, you know, and you got to, like, shit, we got to kind of fix that maybe.
So at what point do you say, will it look good on film? Like, are you always thinking that as you're writing? Like,
yeah, I'm thinking about that from that standpoint.
Yeah.
I'd say it doesn't really start to shape into something good.
Yeah, so
until like the eighth draft.
Yeah, I've read different drafts of different screenplays you've written in, and I can tell you are about the story and the character, because that's what seems to drive how you like to write. And I love that as an actor. I mean, that's one of my favorite parts about Greg is he writes for the character development, which, you know, sometimes it's drawn out too long, sometimes it's not big enough, but he usually figures it out by the time whatever draft number it is comes out and he's ready to get ready to shoot.
Okay, for example, the last completed script that I have, and this was a few months ago, is it's a vampire picture called Bloodletted. That's a working title.
Bloodletted.
That's a working title. Dracula's Last Blood.
Thank you.
That might be another title. Anyway, the point is, it's on officially draft two, and I know that one of the main characters is not developed enough. And I didn't realize this until after it was written, that is the sheriff character of the small town.
Right.
This character does not really have any noticeable flaws. I mean, in my head, he does, but on the page,
well,
which is where it matters.
You're seeing him, though. You're picturing him.
Yeah.
And they're,
but it's not in the script.
Yeah. Right, but they're inherent flaws, right? So you may get some of the flaws out of it by cinematography, by action that, you know, is
no
words.
No, I think it has to be done in the writing.
It's got
to
be done in the writing. Okay. So I don't have that character developed enough. And, of course, I didn't... Again, I don't count the first couple of drafts as anything other than world building and workshopping. And it's not done until it's done. And really, a script is never done.
Okay.
So anyways, point is, I know that this character needs more development.
So stay on that just for a second. My Brock pours it's himself helping, yeah. another
this
angel's
is for
envy.
Greg, I think.
Oh, that's for Mr. Greg. So let me ask you this, because I only have seen, I mean, now that I've started reading some of your stuff, I'm understanding it more, but I've only seen final script, only produced once. So do when you're writing, it's not just about the dialogue. It's also about
the what
the camera has to do in that sense. Okay, so when I say character flaws, okay, let's take the sheriff, right?
Yeah.
So if the scene opens up with zero dialogue and he's laying there on his bed, right, with a hooker or somebody or some lady, you know, with beer bottles everywhere.
I assume you know the cinematography part of that.
Right, because that's written. That's your mind. Right, yeah. That's in that. That's all part of it. That builds character immediately.
Yeah, but it's still written within.
But where does that come from? So how does that get built in? Because that's not.
Well, it would say
interior. This he's laying here.
Yes.
Blah 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 blah. That's so you are building character in there because you wrote that little blurb. For
well, sure, but that's not cinematography. That's no cinematography.
Yeah. So
notes.
So one thing.
But what is that then? Tell me, because I'm trying to explain it for people out there. What is that? What is what I just said? What is that? Because you're not telling the cinematographer what to do, like paint right
still,
or left.
You still in the script, you read it, and it builds character. You can build character off the script from that. No cinematography notes at all.
What that is? That's scene description.
Mm-hmm. Scene description. Okay.
Right.
Sorry. Yes.
So okay. So you it's scene description, and I don't write more than three lines of scene description. And even that's kind of excessive.
And then you let the folks in your movie, like your set designer, build that vision out through you and the producers.
It's not a novel. You don't want to read a novel when you're reading a script.
I'm
just telling everybody. So when you read a script, it's way different than a novel. Like a novel will describe every little minutia detail to help build that in your mind.
Because that's all you have.
That is. And sometimes it's too excessive to me, even in a novel. You know, like, shit, get to the goddamn story already. You know, I just hear a description of the background or what this person's supposed to be thinking. But in a script, you don't put what a character's thinking.
So you could say that, and then when you see it on screen and you go back and look at what you wrote, you're like, holy shit. Either the cinematographer got it, the producers got it, the director got it, everybody got it. Because what you thought exactly came out onto that without any words, with you just saying, opens in bedroom, hookers this, cigarettes on the floor, beer bottles everywhere.
Yeah, like I described something like a hotel room, last updated in the 1970s, a real dump. And that's it.
Because the picture is going to show that.
That's what you talk with a set designer after the fact.
Okay, that's exactly. Sorry about that.
And the same thing with...
A good question, though.
With camera movements, you know, I don't put, you know, camera zooms in.
No, any of that stuff. No, I got that. I knew you didn't do that part of it.
That is not your job to do that. That's the cinematographer's job to interpret what the writer has written and what the director wants visually, right?
Or what works for the characters, what works for us in a movie, what works, and that's the collaborative process.
Yeah, you want to paint a picture with as few words as possible that gives as much description as possible, which is not easy to do,
right?
But so you use descriptors like, you know, hotel room, last updated in the 1970s, dumpy, and that gives you an
idea.
You get
that.
Yeah,
it's a starting point.
Yeah.
Okay. So going back just to get you back on track. You don't have enough character development. You have to write the actual flaws of this person, how he talks, right? What is talked about? How do you build flaws into people?
Yeah, I mean, you write that in the description, in the character dialogue, the dialogue, the interaction with other characters, and you know, it's you don't want to be too on the nose with character description.
Yeah. So what I've learned from not just Greg's scripts is. You know, a lot of it is up to the director and the actor collaborating after writing. Like, you know, Greg is not going to write, this character was abused as a child or whatever. That's something you develop yourself to make whatever flaw.
Whatever
is.
You need to have to have.
Yeah,
that,
I mean, and you know what? The audience don't need to see that. Like say there was a character who was abused as a child. But it's not... It doesn't have anything to do with the story itself, but it could help that actor get to whatever he needs to do in a scene or throughout the movie. And you just kind of see that there's something going on. You don't necessarily describe this. I mean, this is just an example.
No, but you might write a line to make him an asshole, right? Sure. To his mom or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you might develop as an actor the backstory behind that on why he did that.
That's right.
Right? That's the difference between how you write to develop character and how an actor develops.
Yeah, and one thing you can do is you can write, you know, background histories for your characters, none of which might even make it into the film, but that's something that can help you as a writer to understand this character, and that's something that can help an actor to help play that character.
Right. This is why I wrote it this way. Here's a little bit thing to help you.
Yeah.
Do what you want with it. from an actor standpoint.
And in Greg's movie, he likes flashbacks every now and then because he really likes to do character development to just bring more depth to the story, right? And I like that too, because you do show some flashbacks in some of the films sometimes.
Yeah.
In your story to help go like, why is this character like this? And you see a little. It could be a quick flashback, you know, just a quick little snip, and it helps the audience go, okay, I understand what this character is going through right now, which I think is cool.
No, it's a technique. I think we've talked about that before. So I'm sorry, I got you off track. So now you're building character development. You're going through your third write. Now people are reading it.
Yeah, and that's one I sent out to friends and family, and that's to get the first round of feedback, because feedback is important. And feedback is a son of a bitch to get out of people. Because I tell you what, it does not help the writer if someone is nothing but praise, and it doesn't help the writer if someone is overly critical. Right, that's not helpful. What you want is someone to give you honest feedback, which I like this, I didn't like this.
Yeah.
And generally what you take is if you send it to 10 people and maybe hear back from 3, but if you send it to 10 people and if 8 out of 10 people say, I don't think this character of Joe works at all, then you might want to think, oh, wow, I really like that character, but man, if nobody likes that character, maybe I need to rethink that. Mm-hmm. Or if 8 out of 10 people or 9 out of 10 people or 10 out of 10 people say, I don't like the scene in the diner, you might want to think, oh man, wow, maybe that scene doesn't work. Maybe I should take it out. So you really need to take the number of people, and if they all kind of hammer on the same thing, mm-hmm. you can kind of see a pattern there. Like, well, if all these people don't like this, then maybe this doesn't work.
From a friends and family, which isn't a...
Not a professional. Not a professional screenplay reader.
Right. That's, I know, because when you send me stuff, I like to call you and talk through my comments more than write them out. In that sense, and talk through why did you think this, why did you think that, and that kind of stuff. But
and also, and this is important, if you have to explain anything to anyone, you have failed.
You missed it.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I'll read a script 2 or 3 times before I give feedback, if I'm asked to give feedback.
That's important, Brock.
Because sometimes it just may be reader mistake. So I'll go through and look at it again. I know one of the last scripts you had me read, in a week, he's like, hey, have you read it? And I'm like, yeah, but give me more time. I want to read it another time and make sure I didn't misinterpret something myself as a reader. And sometimes I miss something, you know, the first read, and you catch something the second time around.
No, I think that's important, Brock, because you can read it in different times of your day, right? You might have been rushing through it because Greg was calling you, right? I think you need to give it that.
Well, sometimes, so I try to read any script. I'm just reading the script as a script. I really don't try to act like any character that I'm reading for. I'm just reading it to see if it makes sense. But sometimes your mind wanders, you know, and you're like, shit, okay. And sometimes you'll go like, which character? Because sometimes writing, some characters kind of sound alike on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you got to go back and go, okay, which character am I reading? So I'll go back and
right. The second time you read it, you're not doing that. Third time you read it, you're absolutely not doing that.
Right.
I had a problem is taking the producer hat off, because I know we're probably going to produce these ourselves through 88 and going, well, how would that scene, how would that, and I would lose, I'd be like, man, what the hell am I supposed
you
to
do? You start thinking about the real stuff, making it.
Exactly. Yeah. Not the story. Or who's this character? And I remember I called you and I was just like, hey, I don't know about, you know, who'd you have in mind for this? And he's just like, well, that's not the point. You're like, why are you thinking about that already? And I'm just like, well, I don't know about that. And you're like, man, you are like on step 50.
You got to
come back. I'm just asking, does the writing make sense? Is this something we can make, you know, would the audience understand it from A to B? Or did I mislead them, right? Not even can we make the movie.
And here's another thing that as a writer you have to be cognizant of is character names. They have to sound very different. You can't have three characters name Tim, Jim, and Kim.
Yeah, no.
You cannot do that.
No, because I screw them up just reading the script, like you just said, Brock, and going, wait, it's Bill and Steve. I get them. They're two different people, but I'm like, was Bill the murderer or Steve? What the hell just happened
here? Yeah, you gotta come up with very distinct names for your characters.
And it is hard reading flashbacks, just so you know, on paper.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. It is.
Not everything I write is a flashback.
No.
But he brought up the flashbacks. I was just like, what the hell just happened? Because you don't have the music or the thing or whatever. So, okay, so now you're up to 3. Brock and I have destroyed it, right? We send it back to you.
Yeah.
And now you do what?
Then I get all the feedback back from, you know, draft.
He changed the name. He changed the character.
Rewrote a whole thing. It's not a vampire. It's not a werewolf.
Threw him to the trash.
Exactly. Brock and I are both starring in it. Yeah. And, no. Yeah. So now you're up to, like, now you're rewriting it again, right? You take all the feedback, now you're rewriting it.
And then I try to get up to draft 7 or 8, usually draft 8. And I don't know why that's, you know, not 10, but normally 8 is a pretty good number.
8's great.
8 is great. 7, 8, 9. After draft 8, that's what I usually send to the professional screenplay readers.
What's that about?
That's a service you pay for anywhere between $125 to $300 or whatever it is, where you have from 1 to 3 professional, as far as I know, people who read your screenplay and give you legitimate feedback.
They score it with feedback.
No, I saw they used kind of the same format. And I liked looking at it for Red Knight because I've only seen it once.
Yeah.
And I knew when they all scored the same. Same as, like you said, friends and family looking at it, where everybody came back and said, I love this, right? You're like, okay, nailed that, right? Didn't understand this. And if 9 people come back. But they had the same kind of thing, more in depth, because it's a different formula. It's a formula that sells. It's this. They're looking at it from a professional standpoint, and that's what you're paying for.
Yeah.
But when they came back and they all, even with Red Knight, they came back and said, ah, maybe this about Emma, right? And we went, yeah, you're right, right? She comes out of nowhere, possibly. Maybe you need to introduce her a little sooner to make sure people understand this.
Inter-flashback.
Exactly. Or inter-radio inter-radio thing when you're waking up, right? It's just not an alarm. It's an announcement, right?
It is.
But that's a feedback you got and go, ah, makes sense. Not that, but if 1 or 2 people pick up on that, it think about movies. Is it can be as subtle as possible, but the mind picks it up or the memory picks it up. So you just in just passing mention something about a character, right? On a radio or a TV, or a character just says it just arbitrarily out of nowhere. You don't even know until you get to that scene, and then the people go, oh, what? I heard that. I knew that, because subconsciously they picked it up.
Especially if you watch it a second time.
Or a third time.
Yes, exactly.
You know what? I did not like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood until maybe the third time I watched it.
Really?
And now it's one of my favorite Tarantino movies.
It's a fun movie.
Yeah. It is. I liked it the first time. But
The first time I thought it was too long. And I just,
oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, But, you know, I kept thinking about it. So I went back and saw it again.
Well, you had to watch it again if you were thinking about it. Because you're just like, what did I miss about this movie? Because you're a Tarantino fan.
Well, he's been hit or miss for me. I love his first 3 movies. I like Kill Bill. I did not care for Death Proof at all. I did not care for Inglourious Basterds at all.
Oh, a horrible piece of shit.
I did not care for...
That was a good movie.
Hateful Eight at all. And for, like, those 3 in the middle caused me to not watch Django Unchained for the longest time.
And then...
Finally went back and watched, like, oh, man, this was awesome.
Yeah, he came back,
like,
right?
All those for you. Way better than the Django.
Yeah, he came back for you.
Yeah. Anyway, the point
is... So now you're on 8. We got a professionals, and now you're taking some professional... I guess you... Right, we're paying for these.
Did you hear me say Django?
We did.
Okay.
Yes.
You guys didn't pick up on
it's
that.
Not delivery, it's Django.
I think we did.
Okay. We just tried to ignore it.
Exactly. Moving on. You want to say it again?
No, that you got. It's all right. Never mind. You guys aren't getting the joke. The D is silent.
So now
the D is silent.
It's good. It's good, bro.
Now you got it. Okay. Yeah. You guys drank it more than me, I guess.
Apparently, we keep pouring for Gregor.
Yeah.
So now you trust these guys, right?
The screenplay.
As much as you can.
I mean, sure. It's good.
Still yours.
It's good to get another opinion. And again, you take that with a grain of salt as well, because I don't agree with everything the screenplay readers come back with necessarily, but it's definitely helpful to get that opinion.
You need it. So if anybody's thinking about it, I think it's an expense worth paying for.
Once you're at a certain point in the script, right? You don't send out your first
draft. No, because they're going to look at it and just, they should turn it back in and say, you shouldn't pay me right now.
They won't even read it.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
I just get to page 5 and go, what the fuck?
Right, even when you think you get to that final product, if you haven't figured out your product, like, you figured out your process. You know when you get to 7, 8, 9, you're at the point where going, I just need the fine tuning. I just need to be confident that I got it right. I just need that one more thing where people that aren't used to reading movie scripts, right? That's what these guys do.
Yeah.
And they know... plot points. They know. They know stuff that, right? Because they read. They're just professional script readers. Yeah, exactly. That I think that's important. So when you said that, I'm just like, this is awesome. Because I think even next time it's going to be 3, 4, 5. I think you can do 5 for like 350 or something.
Yeah, something like that.
But it's a cost worth.
Because let me tell you, man, that is not a job I would want, because most screenplays are really bad. There is this site called simplyscripts.net. Maybe it's simplyscripts.com, but the forum is simplyscripts.net. And that has hundreds of unproduced film scripts. And I go in there to read them fairly often, and it is terrible script after terrible script.
So wait, you can go in there and buy them? What is it out there for? It's a
forum, you know, ideally for someone to find and produce.
Okay.
Right? You said you've been on there.
Yeah, I don't even go there anymore because I can't deal with it.
No. It's nothing against the people writing it. It's just they're not skilled in doing it yet. You know, it's hard.
Yes, everyone thinks they can write a screenplay. And I'm not going to tell you that I'm not a working screenwriter. I've been doing it for a long time, and I think I have reached at least a baseline of skill, right? But there are so many people so much better than I am as a writer. But I think I know sort of the basic tricks to write a competent screenplay, right?
I'd say so.
I wouldn't say I've mastered the art by any stretch.
I say you get better every time you write.
Well, thanks. I think I'm a competent screenwriter, but it's a hard craft to master.
Yeah, what you do, like anybody in any profession, is you learn and you develop and you grow from that standpoint.
I think the one thing we learned from Red Knight is there's a lot of character development going on. And you've even said this yourself. The front end of Red Knight is way slower than the second and third act. But it's kind of made that way on purpose to develop your characters. But I do think there's room to grow and develop your characters quicker.
Oh, yeah. I mean, before things start going off the rails in a movie, I think it's like the 22 to 24 minute mark.
Is that what it is?
Okay. Yeah, something like that, which is not terrible
for
a 90 minute movie.
Pretty normal.
I mean, but, you know,
first third.
Yeah, you're setting up the character in the stories.
But you threw some comedy in there. You did some other things that you thought might work, might not. There's other ways you can cover that and still do the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? There's just different techniques and things like that. That's where I think you learn, understand, willing to accept other people's opinion on it. I know from a producer side of things, I'm looking at things way different, because once you put it on film, I've said some things after the fact and went, hey, why didn't we do this? And going, there was a time for you to say that.
I got to tell you.
Well, you did, right? Because that one line still bothers me.
I know. But I got to tell you,
Brock, I know.
Some of the feedback we've got from other people who, like, are looking at the movie, going out, you know, giving us feedback on maybe new edits.
Yeah.
From the people talking to me about the movie itself, they don't want any change. They really like what's going on there, because there's a little bit slivers of comedy in this horror action horror film, and they really liked the comedy aspect of it.
Yeah, no, I would say the comments that I've heard, the feedback I've heard from people who've seen the film has been overwhelmingly positive. I have not heard any negative.
Nothing negative.
There could be some scenes, maybe tightened up. Possibly, if we actually want to do a re-edit, and I'm not advocating for that.
What?
No, the funny stuff seems to really go well with people.
No, I think it does. I mean, that's my only thought is, I think there are ways to shorten the first act of the film.
Yes.
Whether or not we're going to do that, I don't know, because I think it works really well. Could it? It would be a slightly different movie if we did make those changes. Would it be better? I don't know.
Right. But it was interesting how it was that comment on that thing, and you're like, yeah, I thought about that. I thought it was very professional. It wasn't a knock. It wasn't anything else. It was like, I mean, the guy wants to sign with us. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those things where you're always looking at the writing. You're always looking at the thing. You're always looking at it after the fact.
Well, my point was just to say that talking to audience members, there was not an issue with some of the professional advice we got.
No, right. Well, I thought we took the professional advice before we did it very well and made the changes we needed to make. After the fact, it's kind of too late.
Well, it's not released yet. We could still do whatever the fuck it wants.
No, but you have to go back and reshoot it.
Sure.
But there's many Hollywood films that the ending just didn't work because they tested it with audiences. Yeah, and they go back and they put millions of dollars back in. Right. We don't have that luxury.
No, we wouldn't need to fix anything like that.
We don't have that luxury, but we also don't have that problem because everything, I think, works.
But I think that's my last question for you on this topic is that means we have to put more time into the script writing and the thought process, because once we get it on film, it's done. We don't have the luxury of going back and reshooting it because we don't have the money, funding.
Yeah, it's done-ish, right? When you get done with the script initially and you're going to go into production, whatever shooting script you take into production is still going to have changes when you're shooting the film. Because, and I was talking to someone about this, I don't know, earlier, that a line or a scene in the film which worked on paper beautifully, you get on set and the day of, you're like, all of a sudden, man, this doesn't make any goddamn sense why they're saying this line. And it doesn't matter how,
right, with the bar scene and the setup and everything, whatever it was, right, it just doesn't work.
So it still gets changed even in production.
Well, hell, you were writing on Red Knight.
Yes.
The days of.
Yes.
We were talking about rewrites.
I remember one instance we were getting ready to move on from one scene to another, then maybe it's me that realized, or maybe it's you, I can't remember, realized, well, there's a little gap here because this character needs to realize this just happened to move on to the next scene, and it's not written that way, so we need to get an extra shot here. And we did. We did a quick pickup shot, and, it was Cole realizing something, because he basically had to walk over somebody's body.
Yeah, yeah, I think it was you who brought that up to me and said, hey, we don't have this there. It might have been you to me or me to you. I don't remember, but I remember we need this little bit of coverage, and it did make a big difference later on.
Right,
and we were able to use footage from a different part in the film to also
add more
impact to that.
Best actor, best director.
Well,
what am I going to say here?
Come on,
I mean, my goodness,
there was no best producer award. I didn't write in there.
You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying, though. I mean, I was in. If there would have been supporting small pawn shop guy, I would have been right there with him.
I actually did get another award for best producer for Sound of Nothing, but only because I put my kids in the movie. Chris Clark gave me a nice little. It wasn't
that's kid.
Yeah, he's like, hey man, we just thought we'd give you an award because you know you're a cool director. You put your kids in the movie. Congratulations, here's an award.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh,
yeah. I didn't know Game of the Year won something.
It did.
Look at us.
I know.
Yeah,
Mackie, you got an award going.
I don't have anything going.
That's
on.
You.
I don't have anything.
No, that was the Mackie vehicle. Game of the year.
Oh man.
Hey guys, we're getting run long here pretty quick.
We are.
I'm low on booze.
All right, so just to finish this up. When you got the script, right, I think we need to put more time, just to make my point, we need to put more time.
Yeah, we need rods right here to get this all connected.
Exactly.
Connecting rods.
Connecting rods. Here comes the first rod.
All right.
Oh, sorry about that. For you people just listening online. I think in independent film, you need to put more time in the script writing, the script working, the script this, knowing you're going to make some changes on set. But once it's locked, once you got that, you pretty much can't afford to go back and change it because you're not going to do test audiences. You're not going to do all this stuff. So the more time and effort you can do on the free stuff, because it is, it's time and effort, right?
Yeah.
And a little bit of pay. I think that's more important than trying to work it as you go.
No.
So take more time writing the script, that kind of stuff. So
a tight script will save your ass in production and post-production.
I agree. Less things you got to think about when you get there, mm-hmm. and more things you can concentrate on.
Absolutely. The more work you put into the screenplay, the better off you will be.
And I keep further calling it script. Is it screenplay?
Screenplay, script, whatever you call it.
Okay, thank you.
The more work you put into that, the happier you're going to be further on down the line throughout the entire process.
Yep.
If you have a solid script and a solid story, you're going to have a solid movie.
Wow. It's beautiful.
It is.
What did we learn tonight?
Well, I think we learned about the highs, the lows, and the in-betweens.
And rod connectors.
And connector rods.
Yeah, that too.
Of true independent filmmaking on the Any Film Sucks podcast, brought to you by 88mm Productions. You know.
Go connect your rods.
Go.
It's there.
Go Blues.
It's out there.
Go Cardinals. Go City.
Go City.
You got the football team here now.
Oh, yeah. Battle Hawks.
Come on!
Good night.
film sucks. Indie film sucks. It's the Indie Film Sucks podcast. Yeah.